morning, everybody. What? Or good afternoon, everybody. Whenever it is, you get your podcast fix. My name is Derek Smith, and this is the Truth or Derek Show, or the Truth or Derek Podcast, or the Truth or Derek Talking About Nothing, and the Truth or Derek with lawyers and supermodels pretty soon, and you know, whatever it is over here. But you guys seem to like it. I wanted to thank everybody. We have a ton of new areas hitting the download button on the old TRD podcast, which I appreciate. As always, you guys know you can reach out to me in a number of different ways, including we're putting our stuff up on YouTube. We just waited a few days because we like the podcast to get the download. So, you know, just like to spread it all out there. But as always, man, I wanted to thank you. All of our feedback is incredibly positive. And, you know, I want to say our listeners are the best. You guys rock. And speaking about things that rock, have you guys heard about podstars.net? I know we had Gary, one of our new listeners in Florida, shot us out an airplane question last week. And I talked about it. He said, you know, could you do the Podstars read in your pilot's voice? And I thought, you know what? Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready to take your podcasting career to the next level with www.podstars.net? Podstars is a talented and passionate community with their tables down and their tray tables up and their seatbelts on that will give you the opportunity to interview top professionals from a variety of industries where they will share their insights and experiences with your audience. Plus, everybody will have access to the exclusive celebrity catalog featuring some of the best in the business, both new and established. Podstars is also free to join. As a member of Podstars, you can choose from the catalog of celebrities to interview on your podcast, and if interested, for an additional monthly fee of only $8.99 a month, you can upgrade to the community plan, a completely different and exciting catalog full of some of the best experts and professionals in their fields today, as well as access to everybody in the whole Podstars universe. It is a great way to invest in your podcast, as you will save time and money by being able to book guests from one platform with an expansive catalog that is constantly being added to. We expect to pull into Las Vegas in 3 hours and 45 minutes. There is a little choppy up there, so you might be able to expect some turbulence, but nothing too extreme. And in the meantime, why wait? You join www.podstars.net now and start exploring all they have to offer. You will not want to miss out on this amazing opportunity to elevate your podcasting career and be part of the exciting community. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for flying with the Truth or Derek podcast. I should try to do a whole show like that one time. I really did. I did a nice calming voice. That's what I know. Two episodes ago when we were talking with Joseph Scott Morgan, when he's telling these horrifying stories about these weird cases and stuff, he just has this like nice chill voice. You know what I mean? Where I know mine's kind of kooky and all over the place, but that's where you get like, Oh, hi, I'm Joseph Scott Morgan. They dropped all the bodies off, and we had to cut them all up and take the temperatures of the livers to try to figure out when they died. I don't know, happily I can master that calmness. And again, thanks to everybody for downloading, streaming, whatever it is you're going to do. You know, we put the episodes up on YouTube a few days later if you want to look at it. I think the video of mine got screwed up on this one, but if you want to stare at Josh and Franz, nobody's going to blame you. Couple of handsome devils right there. What were we going to talk about? We still had a bunch of leftover. There was one really good question, but I got to leave it till next week because I remember I mentioned Danielle Vasanova's coming on with me, Josh, and Franz next week. So if you're if what is up your alley is two lawyers from the South and a model, supermodel / actress from the West Coast, then you're going to love it. But in the meantime, you're going to love this one too. We got to a lot of good stuff and we're drafting off stuff every episode. A lot of fun. And again, all these questions about food rolling, and especially when we're trying to get some questions together for Danielle. And if you guys have those, you know how to reach out to me just on Twitter or just Google the Truth or Derek podcast. And there's a bunch of different ways to send me messages. But I guess somebody that chimed into one of our things we were talking about on Twitter, I don't know, a week and a half ago. Darnell just wrote, WTF is a poutine. Now, if you're from anywhere in the north, and it's not a Canadian thing, but essentially what a poutine is cheese, fries, and gravy. However, the cheese is a little bit different. So during the mozzarella making or whatever some of these white cheeses they make, they create kind of like a byproduct, what's called a cheese curd. Now, as soon as I hear the word curd, I think it's gross because you think of like curdled stuff or tofu curd, that sort of thing. But it's not. I guess it just kind of describes the shape. What it is, it's like a really dense, like a cheese stick, but it's like not as processed. But it's like kind of like a string, dense cheese string sort of thing, and they're incredible. And if you ever get a chance, if you're ever at a fair or a food truck, a lot of places they have them deep fried. And I'll tell you right now, the deep fried cheese curd, one hell of a snack. But yes, it's nothing special to the fact that I'm pretty sure everybody on the planet. Although I talked to somebody today that knew a woman that didn't have relish or black pepper until she was in her 20s. So my heart goes out to you. Maybe we'll do a relish episode at some point because like everything, all the questions that came in this week were sort of food related. But back to poutine, the cheese fries and gravy, it's nothing, but it's like it's a bigger piece of cheese that sort of half melts and half stays stiff that you can get like a good scoop on when you get your fries and your gravy into it. And it's definitely one of my favorites. And we were talking too that a lot of the places they put toppings on it, like buffalo chicken, dynamite. Some of them put like you can get a pierogi on it or Philly cheesesteak meat. You name it. But again, if you ever get a chance at poutine, oddly enough, our Costco has an incredible poutine. And it weighs like, you know, if you're hungry and it's like a cold day, it'll warm you up and you'll be full for days. It weighs like 5 pounds. So that is what a poutine is. One of the other ones, this one came in from our people in Virginia. When you go to a buffet, what is your go-to thing? I haven't been to a Mandarin in a little while, but in general, I'm going right for beef and broccoli, which I don't want to say is healthy, but at least there's broccoli in it. But I've had that. We have some of these places up here where like the all-you-can-eat sushi joint, but they have some stuff like to order where there's like robots that bring it to your table. The whole experience was really cool. But even that, the beef and broccoli, you know, I'm known to hit a food court or two whenever I'm in the neighborhood. I've been to a few different food courts just for whatever reason in the last few weeks. And I don't know, man, beef and broccoli, always my go-to, never disappointed. Secondly, I know we've always talked about my love of rice, which nobody makes sense because they're like, rice is this and rice is that. I don't know, man, you give me rice and beef and broccoli. Derek is a happy boy. And if speaking of food, I know every time we always get on the food chats, we always tag Kirk Nermy in it. Now, he's the sweetest guy. So for those of you who aren't familiar with it, he was Jodi Arias' attorney. And after that, he had cancer, so he gave up the law to get better and all this sort of thing. And he just found a path to being a happier guy, which involved a lot of weight loss. So he's in like this horrifyingly healthy diet. So me, Josh, Franz, and a lot of other people, whenever we find horrifying shit at a mall or a food court or whatever, we always tag him in it just to get his response. And then he wrote back, and we don't have this here. He's like, us people in the North, we get things late. Like, I remember I was seeing commercials for the KFC, the Double Down, like a year before I got to try one, which I still think is funny that the Atkins thing was like, oh no, this is perfectly healthy on a diet. I was like, it's just cheese, bacon, and fried chicken. Yeah, so I tried not to make a habit to have that more often than necessary, but now he sent over to get it. They don't have it here yet, but I'm coming down there in the fall. I think we're doing a little road trip. I don't know if people have heard of this. It's called KFC has a chizza. And yeah, brilliantly named, and it also kind of explains it. Because what do you think it is? It's a thinly, it's a thinly deep fried battered chicken breast with pizza toppings on it instead of crust. And if you look at the picture, I'm going to tell you, it actually looks pretty darn good. But listen, man, it's a lot of these fried chicken joints. There's only so much you can do with it. Aside from, like I said, when they dice it up and they put it with hot sauce and they put it on a poutine, oh my God, gravy and hot sauce, match made in heaven. But I'm not so sure if the fried chicken crust and pizza toppings are a match made in heaven, but I do want to try it. I know we've tried it a few times when we went to like the Rib Fest and all that sort of thing, where they use tater tots and they put pizza toppings on it. Absolute home run. But I'll have to go into my love of tater tots another time. I got a lot of positive feedback from my advice that we were talking about last week about if you hate your boss or a coworker, just to not have a meltdown and try to figure out what the long-term plan is. I was surprised a lot of people agree with me. I was expecting a lot of, oh, you're a sissy. Oh, go in and grab your boss by the neck. I always hated that term when people say, well, if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. And I was like, that is the most condescending bullshit I've ever heard, because 99% of us, you know I don't have a huge passion for my job. I mean, I'm good at it, and I like, you know, making money at the end of the week, and that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. There's no passion. Well, I guess maybe I have passion for my part-time job, which is podcasting. I hope my passion is coming through right now. And speaking of passion, I think we should get over to the boys, and again, reach out to me with a whole bunch of questions. I appreciate all the stuff that you guys have gotten over here. Let's keep it coming. You know what? Hold on. Let me go through that. Yes, just before we get to another dueling episode of Josh and Franz, again, reach out. You know, every episode we're doing drafts now. If you guys have a topic for a draft or whatever, just, again, reach out to me with anything. You know, we're pretty easygoing over here. But, again, Florida, the last couple of weeks, blowing up like crazy. After that, New Jersey, man, a strong following. Shout out to my East Coast people. Coming in after that, Alabama, Louisiana, Pennsylvania, Arkansas, we've had before, Virginia, you know we have people there. First for us, a bunch of downloads in Massachusetts. Shout out to our Boston crew, everyone except for Tom Brady, but you know how we feel about that. So New York, Oregon, South Carolina, and even in Tennessee, and of course a bunch in Texas, just a lot of love. And listen, we love you right back. Again, you guys ever want us to talk about anything, whatever you need, we got it for you here on the Truth or Derek show. And let's get over to the main event. Let's shut me up and get to the main event. So we got Josh.
It looks
and we
like
got Franz
is in Lesko. The middle of taking a crap when I took this picture. So
all right. Well, if you guys like automatic.
Speaking of the base.
If you guys like automatic toilet seats and problems with the law, then you're going to love this, because he is one of the best attorneys in Baton Rouge. Well, heck, in all of the USA. He is a regular on Court TV, as well as various other news outlets. He's awesome on Talk 107.3 with Brian Haldane. He visits churches. He's great on Twitter. He is fantastic, Franz Borghardt, alongside a TRD podcast Hall of Famer, the pride of Atlanta, also tearing it up on Court TV, CNN, Atlanta News First, and a million other places.
Woo-hoo!
You know him as one of the smartest people in show business. You know him as one of the greatest haircuts in show business. Being awesome on social media and everywhere else, the incredible Joshua Schiffer. How we doing, fellas?
I'm thrilled to be here with you two fine.
No. I'm the lucky one. I'm the lucky one.
Man, you're making my heart all swell.
I think the only thing that would make this better for those who are listening and not watching is we can't see Derek's beautiful Canadian face.
Yeah, I know. We had a little problem with the video, but the audio is here, and you can still look at these two. And I look the exact same.
And if you close your eyes, you can still smell them. So you see, we've got that. And anytime I close my eyes hard enough, I just see poutine.
I smell like Canadian bacon and gravy and French.
Man, we got to do a whole show on exactly what Canadian bacon is and how
just that ham.
Compares to bacon. That's a whole discussion. Because Japanese bacon, different, good, but not American bacon.
I do love some Canadian bacon.
You know what's funny? With all the stuff we've been talking about food lately, we had a ton of stuff back. But one of them was with some of our draft. They were talking about, you just said Japan. There is places in Japan that just sell pizza crust.
Yeah, I've actually seen.
It's actually called pizza crust.
Yeah, Japan has one of the most brilliant restaurants of all time. The all cereal restaurant, where it's just breakfast cereal and different. I'm like, that has got to be the highest margin restaurant to run. No heat, just cool bowls, spoons. That's it.
$14 for a bowl of fruit.
Yeah, totally. Dude, you want the special milk? Man, that's an upcharge. That's an upcharge.
Now, I was going to tell you guys, because we had, I've screwed up putting our episode out last week, so we'll have two next week. But after we had Joseph Scott Morgan on, we had a ton of downloads. We're going to give our friends in Florida a shout out. Shout out, Florida, in a good way. So after
that comes with a warrant, generally, if you're shouting out people in Florida, it's like a warrant.
After they downloaded that one, they downloaded a bunch of ours. And actually, a few people from Florida have fired in some questions, some good ones, too.
We will be polite.
Yes, this is my natural hair.
And this is my natural hair.
God, it's so dude, luxurious, gorgeous.
Best Amazon purchase, certainly, of 2024. And I think I may get some more. My daughter couldn't keep her hand. She was like, Dad, you look awesome. So like I've not gotten to pick her up in school. Graded. But that will happen.
So our man, Jesse in Tampa, I'll ask you, Franz, first. If you weren't a lawyer, what would you be?
So I had visions of being a school teacher, college professory, probably English literature. I took a wrong turn to Albuquerque and ended up being a lawyer. But yeah, if I wasn't a lawyer, I'd probably do that. I would love to be a legal commentator and not a lawyer, but I'm just too busy doing podcasts at this point. And then a very near second, I would like to go to culinary school.
Really?
Yeah, I would love to go to culinary school. I love cooking. Ooh.
You know what's interesting? Because we have a lot of friends of ours and stuff that are always down in New Orleans, the French Quarter in Louisiana and all that, that say the food is so much better there than it is when you have Louisiana style food anywhere else. It's like you guys have a secret that you're not letting out of town.
It's the crime seasoning. And the water.
It's the seasoning and the water of the Mississippi all together. Magic.
How about you, Josh? Not a lawyer. What are you going to be?
So my undergraduate degree, and I would have gone right into it had there not been a hiring freeze, was foreign service work. Like I studied international relations, international development. I was going to go Peace Corps and save the universe and bring, you know, food delivery to the whole undeveloped world. But there's no food delivery there already, and there was a hiring freeze. So I kind of went to law school as a backup. And in law school, I wanted to do corporate and, you know, big money, quiet, important. Nope, that stuff's horrifying. And I couldn't be the kind of lawyer that didn't involve trial work. Now, at the same time, it's very similar to Franz, and I think it's common in the law, we're all frustrated chefs. And I actually, in 2007, came a hair's breadth away from quitting my work as a lawyer and then not starting the firm that I now run, which is when I started it. And we were going to move to New York, and I was going to run a food cart. And I wanted to run a barbecue food cart. This is, you know, mid-2000s, so before the food cart universe exploded. And I wanted to do a food cart, and my wife at the time had a job that would have been Wall Street. So it came very close to actually happening.
Oh, that's really weird to think about you working at a food truck.
I used to write about food. Like in law school, my hobby was writing about food. Like I don't look like this because it's convenient.
So my junior and senior year of high school and my freshman year of college, I actually worked as a baker in a bakery and fell in love with it. And one of my favorite jobs, believe it or not, was I started washing dishes and industrial commercial, like cake pans and all that stuff. And I was happy. I was so happy doing it. It was mindless cleaning things, getting the gradue off of it, rinse and repeat. It was just, oh.
There's a satisfaction. People ask me all the time about jobs that I've had and jobs that I like and don't. Man, I worked in warehouses. I've driven a truck. I've driven forklifts. I've swept floors. I've packed boxes. There's a certain satisfaction in honest blue-collar work. Because guess what? You ain't on the job till you're there. And the moment you're gone, you're done. And that was very luxurious for me at the time. And I tell this to all my students when I teach, I made more driving a forklift than I did in all of my legal jobs until I started working for myself. And then for a couple of years working for myself, I made less than I did driving a forklift. Driving a forklift was very profitable in the late 90s.
You know what? Sorry.
I was going to say, you guys aren't alone in that. You heard that, especially when you're either self-employed or when you have a job that's like, you guys have an important job. I know years ago, I read Howard Stern's book And he kind of said what you guys were saying. It's not like when your workday starts or ends, you don't know. When he started out, he had a job, oddly enough, in a commercial kitchen, like mixing Caesar salad in like a garbage can. And he said it was the robotic work. You knew at the end of the day you had done a great job. You'd make your money and other things. There was no, did I do good today? Did I not do good today? It was just clean.
Well, and one of the struggles, and we should do a show about the not awesome part of lawyering, of which there are several. It's true, the work that Franz and I do, specifically criminal and personal representational work, it's 24 hours a day. You can't turn off. I don't care how far away you go on vacation. That trial that 6 months from now, still sitting back there. And when you're starting a small business that's personal service, remember, we sell time. That's it. Time and knowledge. It's not like I got a widget. No, you're just, whatever's in the brain is where the money comes out of. You are desperate to answer the calls, be available, earn that dollar at the beginning of your practice. It's hard as you get more successful to step back and not answer the phones 24 hours a day. And it
Derek,
is very awful on my life starting a firm.
So Derek, I cannot speak for Josh, but when I get up, my phone literally starts amping up texting calls at about 6:30.
Yep.
And it does not stop.
The sleep function, where it lets you turn off all the noises, very aggressive. And by the time I get up in the morning, odds are I've got at least a text or two that some not super considerate person decided that it was totally fine to message or call me. That contact, because for my big dollar clients, that man, they get me 24 hours a day. You want to pay me that amount of money to be your personal legal man? That's what I do for them.
I'll be your private dancer 24/7 for the right amount of money.
For the right amount, because really, we sell time. We're hookers. It's street walking, except we're licensed. You don't want me for my body. You want me for my mind.
Hold on. Like Julia Roberts, though, I don't kiss on the mouth.
No. I saved the best just for my friends. And
she did kiss him. They kissed at the end of the movie.
She's such a whore.
She's such a whore.
Very, very well acted one. But really, your life is just shared when you run a small business, especially one where you've got the intimacy of criminal defense work, because people think of weird stuff and you want to build a close relationship very often. Because that's how you really will learn to then express what's going on. So it's important, but it's hard. It's why lawyers get paid a lot of money. Because trust me, you don't want to have to care about some people that may have made some challenging decisions in their life that it's now your obligation to fix or care about.
Okay, so a secondary question from Florida from a guy named Mike, who I don't know why he felt the need to tell us he's 42. It said Mike 42.
How does he spell it? Are there two Y's in there? Because I know that Jesse wasn't spelled.
It was J-E-S-S-E. There was another great.
I thought it was an I-E.
Yeah, I was with the I-E too, so.
Okay, well, I'll ask people to spell their names for us and tell us how old they are. The second question was, and I'll ask Josh first, what is the dumbest crime you ever had to defend?
It's an unfair trick question, because at some level, the differences are so infinitesimal, they're all ridiculous. I represented a guy who was on film walking into a grocery store, picking up a pack of ribs, pre-cooked, sticking them straight in his pants, and walking right out the front door. He didn't care. He'd been arrested 100 times. He was on camera. And the reason that story is even funnier is we asked the prosecutor what happened to the meat, and he put it back on the shelf. Which homeless pants meat is wrong. But the dumbest crime, I've seen people get arrested doing truly ridiculous. I had a guy get arrested before he could even walk out of the jail checking out on an arrest. He got in a fight with a deputy during discharge and caught a new charge. So literally, he checked out and checked right back in.
How about you, Franz?
So, for the listeners and viewers, pants stakes are commonly traded for drugs. It's an exchange for crack or whatever drug. In a similar vein, I had a defendant that I got appointed to represent who broke into the back of a seafood restaurant and was trying to, quote, sleep in the freezer of the restaurant, which is they thought that he was trying to steal the frozen stuff, but he said, no, I was sleeping in the freezer. So, yeah. Not so much the stupid things. It's not so much the stupid things. It's the reasoning behind the stupid or the justification behind the activities that's stupid.
Now, in both of those cases,
steal crates of frozen ice cream pops from an ice cream company. He had no place to put them, and it was a Georgia summer. He stole something that was literally the most perishable item he could carry and still got the value on it. It was terrible.
It's funny when you guys say that everything that's stolen is for drugs. I know one of the number one most shoplifted thing is baby food. And it's not for people.
Baby food, deodorant, personal care items, things that you can sell because everyone uses them. And it's the first stuff that gets locked up in convenience stores and drug stores because that's the most alienable and potable. Like, you can do a lot with a case of deodorant sticks, selling them at $1 a piece.
Well, it's funny, and Franz will agree with me. Like, a six-pack of Gillette razor blades is like $32.
Oh, yeah. Any high-dollar personal care items, that's the baby food, because if you bought it, it ain't cheap. Razors, hair color. Hair color can be really, really expensive.
So there was a case I prosecuted where there was a group of guys that had a scam where they were burglarizing or robbing trucks that were dropping off cigarettes to Circle K. And the cigarettes in and of themselves have whatever value they sell them for. But by cutting the cost and making them street cigarettes, I mean, the restitution was like thousands upon thousands of dollars because it started aggregating and adding up. So, I mean, look, stupid is as stupid does.
and there's a marketplace for anything. There's actually a big news story today where it's some very nice suburban housefrowy looking lady that was apparently running an organized retail theft where she was having people send her Ulta beauty products that were stolen. It was basically a fence, and everybody would send her Ulta Beauty stuff they'd boosted from across the nation, and she'd turn around and resell it on eBay. because there's a lot of resale of retail products in different marketplaces. Prosecuting them is a little bit harder than you'd think.
You know what I want to steal? If I were going to steal anything, heated toilet seat with LED light with a bidet remote.
Now, okay, one of those things, I know we joked about it, but we're going to wait till we have Danielle on to talk about shit we've wasted money on, but I bought...
Did you say shit?
Yeah.
wasted money on?
You're working way too high fancy language there, Canadian.
So I got one of these, and it was, she was like, this is stupid, blah, blah, blah. We hooked it up. I bought my first one right before COVID happened. So everybody lining up for toilet paper and all this sort of thing, it was perfect. Absolutely perfect.
True story. When I got married, we went to a really fancy hotel in New York for the honeymoon, and that was my first experience with a built-in bidet Japanese style toilet seat. And then very soon after, I was gifted one for Valentine's Day, and I kept it in the divorce because those things are awesome. You can have the daughter.
I want the toilet seat.
Yeah, you've never felt as clean. It's like walking out of the shower. And man, I ain't the smallest, skinniest guy in the universe. It's the deep south. It gets real hot here. And the ability to have your whole undercarriage power washed is amazing.
It is. It's stupid, but it is.
Yeah, you don't want the gold bond anymore. It abrogates the need for your baby powers.
And the fact that you can set the temperature.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe I want a warm trickle of water.
Brisk.
Ooh.
Nice hot day. Sit down. Get your whole underside just refreshed. It's fantastic. Now, I would say I do not have a steam clean setting, which I've heard they make a hot water setting.
Ooh.
That's kind of tempting for a man. Ooh. If I lived in Canada,
yeah.
I would want a steam set. And mine's got a remote. A person that I'm close with enjoys it because mine will turn on and make sounds in case you're looking to disguise. Dropping some kids off at the pool.
Right.
And it's classy.
So I just wanted to go back a second because when we were talking about selling shoplifted stuff, one thing I didn't realize, and somebody actually just got a significant prison term for it, was I believe it was in New York, a woman was stealing toner from the office. Because
Oh.
I didn't realize some of these printers, the toners are in the $600 or $700 range. So they'd order some
So.
and she'd take it and sell it on eBay for 350 bucks and had made like 150 grand doing it.
I've had a case where the individual was on the inside as kind of like a middleman processor, maintenance guy for big companies in between the printer lessor that leases the printers to the giant company. And he and a couple of other guys had figured out that there might be some slippage involved and some opportunities they could take advantage of to the tune of way into the six figures on recycled, underused, partially filled, undelivered toner cartridges, because that's the real money in printers is selling them the ink. And that stuff's outrageously expensive.
I had no idea.
So there's a great movie called Office Space that a lot of people that aren't Gen X might not have watched. I highly recommend it. It's hilarious. But the crime in it is stealing a penny, but stealing it thousands and thousands of times. It's actually a fraction of a penny. And it turns out that they've done this millions of times. When you get to economies of scale and theft or fraud, very quickly the amount of money becomes flabbergasting and they don't know what to do with it.
So in the 80s, I believe, Superman 3. How did they get, what was the theft in Superman 3? They were taking pennies that were aggregating. And that's the connection. In fact, there's a reference in Office Space. Look, I know
Oh,
you're
yeah.
Canadian. I know you're Canadian,
I've
but
seen
we have
Office Space. I
this.
just didn't like it.
You didn't like it? Dude, when they take the printer into the field
And beat it with the
and
baseball
rich
bat.
and ritualistically destroy the printer, I was just like,
You know what's funny?
beautiful.
I catch so much shit. We had a few 2 months ago, we had one of the executive on from NBC, and when I was talking to him, I was like, I didn't like Avatar. Like I could give you a lot of Disney movies and stuff because I grew up and that wasn't my thing. So everybody was talking about I don't know. Do you guys have a Franz, do you have a favorite Disney movie?
I do have a favorite Disney movie, but permission to slightly change topic on movies. We were talking about the movie Dune
Yes.
before we recorded, and I will tell you, I've got a special place in my heart for the 1980s Dune, and I love the new Dunes. I
Yeah.
loved.
I think
I,
Josh
I,
just
I'm
saw
gonna
it in the
echo.
theater.
Yeah, I'm going to echo Franz on that. So first of all, I have multiple favorite animated films, some of which aren't Disney, but I think animation's amazing, especially if you've ever seen the Studio Ghibli movies, the Totoro or Howl's Moving Castle. They're the Japanese. They're incredible movies. Another great unappreciated animated film starring some just absolute rock stars, including Chris Rock, is Osmosis Jones. Which is a fantastic, it was awful in the theaters, got destroyed. As a surviving movie, it's fantastic. But on to Dune. Dune was written in the 60s. There is no bigger fantasy world out there save maybe J.R.R. Tolkien. It's that size and depth. The canon developed by the fan base is amazing. And the 1982 David Lynch version of the movie is magnificent. It was a disaster in the theaters, totally financially upside down. But then you'd think I'd hate the new Dunes. No, man, those two new Dunes are unbelievable. Best movie I've seen in a theater in a long time, and absolutely worth going to a theater to watch Dune 2, if only for the big sandworm scenes. It
You know
is
what?
a fantastic movie.
I know you guys are going to goof on me now because I haven't seen any of them, but
Oh, dude, the 80, you got to start with the 82 version. Man, Sting is in it. Dude, it is. And if you read the books, the movies are huge. They're 3, 4 hour movies, only 50% of the books at most. It's like Harry Potter. There's no way you're doing the whole story justice.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up like box office bombing. That's not necessarily a good way to weight a movie because There's some terrible movies out there that have made a fortune, but I think we talked about it a few weeks ago. The Shawshank Redemption made no money, and it won no awards because it came out with Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction.
Let me be very clear. If I go to prison, I'm not going to be the prison lawyer. I want to be Red. I want to be the guy from Shawshank that can find you stuff you need. Want a poster? Want a pickaxe? I'm Red. I
want
to be
that's
Red.
That's because you want to live. being indefensible in prison is a good thing.
Or I'll be a bitch. I'll be somebody's wife.
I've always said that I would probably be turned out quickly in a major system. Like, I'm way too cuddly to be the leader. Like, I'm sitting on the side.
Yeah, remember, it's like, cuddly, you're going to be popular in prison. They're like, that's good. No, that's bad.
I remember in law school when they teach Section 1983, which is civil rights, at least when I went through school, they teach it with this great case that involves a guy showing up in prison on his first day and having been told the first thing you do is start a fight with the biggest, baddest, meanest guy out there.
Go for the Nazi.
Which is kind of true. And so he took a fork and stabbed the guy with the fork. And so the joke amongst my law school crowd, first day in prison, you fork the biggest guy you can find. And it's true. You are going to get beat. Like, you go to prison and it's a medium or maximum scale. You're going to take some licks. I don't care how well liked you are. A beating shall come. It's what you do in response to it. And do you gang up or do you have an option to not gang up? Very often, if you're not in the gang, it's because you're a child molester. And that's a different kind of gang. And it is not necessarily a fun gang.
Not the ones you want to hang out with.
Yeah, well, it's separated among races. Even if the gangs on the outside are enemies, they are friends on the inside.
Yeah.
You get some really odd bedfellows there. But everybody gangs up against the sex predators and the rapist-y guys. It is a very, very sad situation, even though it is nice to define what group you're with from day one.
I wanted to talk a little bit of news stuff before we get to our draft, because as usual, the time is a flying by. But I know Franz is getting some sort of thing installed, and I just heard his Ring doorbell go off because I have one too. What is the deal with them not allowing Ring doorbell camera footage in the legal system now? Is that something obviously good for defense, but it seems like it's a camera like any other camera if you catch somebody up to no good.
You need to get the headline a little bit more accurate. It's not that they're not admissible. They're videos. Videos are independently admissible if you lay the foundation. It is that their cooperation between Ring and law enforcement is going away. And that is because law enforcement, in many situations, may have exceeded reasonable operations and access and abused the gift the communities had given them by allowing access to their Ring cameras, because it turned from a, yeah, you can have my Ring to make sure you catch the bad guy when he robs someone on my street, to, oh, you're going to turn my front door into a surveillance beacon and start arresting people and harassing people using me as your analog.
Now, so who owns that footage? See, we had one issue. It was a little while ago. Somebody, a porch pirate, stole something off our thing. And just to be good Samaritan, my wife had the video, sent it to the police. Like, police service is shit. What people don't understand is, if you're calling police, you have to call 911 or else you get nothing. Like,
is this in Canada? And I'm not hating on Canada when I ask. Is this just in Canada or in general, you feel like police service is shit?
Like, 2 months ago, we saw what we figured was kind of a drunk or drug addicted teenager that was like well dressed and all that sort of thing, just walking down the street like they was having trouble. And we tried to call police service and all that. We were like, you have to send a cop car here. Like, she's going to get hit by a car. And they were like, that's not our district. This is the wrong number. You got to call
the
dispatch.
That's a local dispatch issue that's going to depend on where you're at.
So anyways, my wife takes that footage and all that and sends it over there and say, you know, we got robbed and all that sort of thing. And the police are the same thing. They're like, yeah, well, you know, these things happen. What are you going to do? So I get, if you kill somebody and you get caught on a Ring camera, okay, I understand that would be, you know, crime scene footage or whatever it is. But as far as everything else goes, it just seems like the legal system now, or the police system, they just don't care.
So if I were trying a case and it would benefit my client to have the Ring system work, I would be squealing if I couldn't get the Ring camera in, right?
Right.
Like if it showed another defendant or a person doing the crime, my hope is that I wouldn't be having a trial. My hope is by showing the prosecutor, that prosecutor would do the right thing, right? That being said, if I film some shit in my yard, or now I have four Ring cameras around the perimeter of my house, that means I'm going to be watching stuff.
And three bathroom cameras. Sorry.
Dude, no. I'm not getting a bathroom camera until I get that bidet installed with the LED light.
Let us show everybody.
Different show. By the way, no more interior security cameras if you're VRBO or whatever the home rental thing is.
Only Franz bathroom videos. I don't think anybody knows.
We're going to make a ton of money.
You know, if we can get bidet, like toilet seat makers, manufacturers to sponsor this podcast, I'm just saying, I would take in-kind payment.
Yeah, we just have to put in the name there. Like, oh, you know, we've tried them all, but Toto is the best one. The one that's $4,000.
Toto
Have you ever seen that Toto flushing thing where they flush like 48 golf balls? It's impressive.
Like a jet engine.
But so my dad was the senior scientist at Kimberly-Clark, which makes Huggies. And for a long time, the scientists all joke because they have to have an analog for diaper testing. And somebody's job is to make the analog for diaper testing, because they test a lot of diapers. And there is some poor guy that makes analog diaper contents professionally.
Well, that would be great. You just have to eat fast food all day long and be like, yep.
I mean,
strap me in again. I'm ready.
Is that a segue into fast food conversations?
We still have to cover some news. I don't know. We got a draft later on. I think you guys wanted to do hobbies or fast food restaurants. I'm up for either one.
We can do either, but we've got a couple of things to touch back on. Sorry as I get rid of that message. First of all, the Ring camera, who owns the footage? You have an ownership interest because it's yours. You own the camera, but you've probably licensed or given permission to Ring to hold that video because it's uploaded to their servers. So there's probably some sort of regulated agreement there that probably prevents them from sharing it without your permission, unless there's some sort of override. But you may be able to waive that by joining some sort of law enforcement program, where I know City of Atlanta does it, where they will try to tap into your Ring if you give them permission. That makes a giant quasi-state surveillance system, Skynet kind of thing. So I get both sides of that.
Is that something is that one of those many things that's just buried in your terms and conditions, or people just said, yeah, I agree to
sure.
that.
I'm sure it is. I mean,
everybody screams about privacy. Your cell phone, you have zero property interest or privacy interest the moment you do anything on the internet. Like, it's unbelievable how you are consenting to sharing information with certain groups, just knowing that those groups generally don't share it. But you're sharing that information privately.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Now, back to the news. some pretty big stuff went down with Fannie today. But I also wanted to talk, because I don't want to say we were the first to talk about it, but with the P. Diddy situation, it looks as if now that – have you seen this, what happened with him and Kid Cudi?
Yep, brand new, breaking today.
That there was apparently a car bomb, and it's being linked back to him. So, again, we in the past we've talked a little bit about the RICO cases, and some people were a little bit confused on that. So, can you just give us a really? I know we've done this a few times. Just a quick rundown of what a RICO case is.
So, a RICO case is a racketeering and corrupt organization case. It was developed a long time ago as anti-corrupt organizations intent, but not used. The laws were on the book, and they really gave law enforcement a lot of extraordinary powers. Rudy Giuliani was lauded as a national law enforcement hero in the 1970s when he first took these RICO laws and brought them into the forefront by going after the five families in New York. And these are some of the most legendary true crime stories out there. Rudy Giuliani, the young assistant U.S. attorney, really went out there, used these tools in new and unknown ways, was successful with them, and brought down a lot of organized crime in New York. Then they kind of go back on the burner and people know about them and we learn about them. Then in the 2000s, we started with civil RICO, which is an organized case that you're suing for some sort of damage. So it's in the civil arena. Then that expanded how RICO got used. And then in the last 4 or 5 years, especially here in the state of Georgia, we've seen a new re-interest in RICO being a powerful tool for prosecutors, because what it really does is give them a bully pulpit. They can bring a whole bunch of people into one big group and lean on them. Eventually, a couple people start flipping. Once you get the flippers, all the dominoes fall down.
As best described in the great Hollywood movie, Dark Knight by Harvey Dent, RICO, you know, you get some clean streets because the smaller level guys can't afford to be off the streets. The problem with these prosecutions, though, it's like burning down a forest to cut a tree down.
Yep.
It's like it would be just easier to individually prosecute people than to do this massive, like,
there's no better example of that than what's happened in the YSL case in Georgia, because it's right. already the longest case in Georgia history. Jury selection took basically a year.
No kidding.
Every day is pulling teeth. They pled and had to sever half the defendants. They're only really going after a couple of them, but they've completely iced out an entire judge, his entire staff, all the cases that judge would have handled. They're not getting handled. We're talking about another year of litigation, all to really go after a couple big hitters who they could have gone after individually. So now the question is on DA Willis, why are you prosecuting people in this apparently inefficient manner?
So now, as you guys as lawyers, I know we always talk about what the stuff that you see coming, the cases that you see coming that are excited. When you start to see something like the P. Diddy thing where, okay, you got a car bombing, you have some underage girls here, you have drugs, you have a $1 billion empire, there's ties in with Biggie Smalls. Like, can you see this as one of those things that's going to go on for 5 or 10 years where you're going to be blown away? Or do you think this is going to be one of those, pay the money and the whole thing goes away?
Oh.
How much money are we talking?
He's got it.
I mean, look, the best part about RICO cases is if you're like a mediocre to above average a criminal defense attorney in the jurisdiction and there's 50 defendants, you got work.
Yep.
So when I hear
everyone kind of thing.
So not to be vulgar, but I mean, I'm going to be vulgar. My nipples get rock hard like an ice cube when I hear RICO. I'm just saying.
And you got to look at the position of the people involved. Diddy's got whatever, hundreds of millions of dollars. He may be a billionaire for all I know.
Right.
And a lot of his stuff is not of a clear empirical value because it's companies and art interests and royalty. There's a lot of stuff.
Kookaroos.
Yeah, exactly. So what kind of shakedown is it? If it's a legit shakedown where he was involved, civil RICO specifically has these powerful discovery rules where you get to rip apart the person that you're suing. You can pull information, third-party subpoenas. You get these wild goose case investigations. And if it's a colorable civil RICO claim and you're willing to have a lawyer to do it, you can just go far afield. But on the other side of that coin, if your fishing expedition is bullshit, you're going to get killed in fees. And man, as strong as the tools are, the clapback is fierce. So who knows what Diddy's appetite to deal with this is? If it's, hey, give the person $50,000, I'd give him $50,000 in a second.
Yeah.
But it ain't just $50,000.
Bad boys for life, baby.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll settle out of court right now for the original shiny suit with mace.
You know, oh, baby. We'll tip on that when we have a little bit more time, because I have a whole bunch of notes on that I'd love to go through, but we do have to talk about your Fannie Willis. Now, I had the understanding that she was going to be done with this case because the shitstorm that surrounds it, it doesn't do her any good. It doesn't do the prosecutor. It doesn't do anybody any good. And then
she's doubling down.
And now Nathan Wade's out, apparently.
He literally has retired, has resigned. His resignation letter is posted on my Twitter, and Bonnie took it. So.
So, but now if she's going to walk into court, like it's just it not so much hard to be taken seriously, but or beating a dead horse or any of those things. But like, is it going to be impossible for walk in there and do her job with just again with the dog and pony show that's going to be surrounding?
Well, so here's the thing. Fonnie Willis, as a person, is a hell of a good lawyer.
I've
And
heard,
if she
yeah.
wants to be the lead prosecutor, she absolutely is qualified and could do that. I don't think she's gonna, but she's got a whole office to run. She has two also currently employed and appointed super smart people, Anna Cross and Mr. Floyd, who are working on the case as private special prosecutors. Either of them could try the case. Anna being a better lead trial attorney than Floyd. Floyd's really there because he's the RICO master. Then she's got people like Adam Abate in her office that are full-time regular DAs. I know Adam really well. He's a great lawyer, despite how much he struggled in that last hearing, and could absolutely run this case. It's going to be interesting to see what choices Fonnie makes because it appears she's going to keep the case. She's not going to DQ her office. And that means someone's going to have to take the lead position, but we don't know.
Is this going to once again go on forever with the Trump money and all that, or do you think this is something that they can wrap up relatively quickly?
I think the important piece is the only ones that are going to win in this case are the defense attorneys.
And they've already got a sack full of victories. Like on the first day that all these defendants were hiring the defense attorneys, it was what's the big goals besides winning? Oh, pushing this back beyond November. Pushing this back beyond November. It was the real goal. And while Fonnie Willis still has a slightly cracked open window to get this tried before November, let's be serious. If the judge put down a pre-November trial date, they'd just file something to appeal it because Fonnie's given them that opportunity. Fonnie handed calendar control over to the defense by making these intimate relationship decisions months and months and months ago. And it from a justice perspective, I hate watching the state get played because they got played.
Switching over again, we'll have more on that next time because that's obviously a lot of news coming out now. Everybody's going crazy about the Alec Baldwin situation, saying that the lawyers broke the rules. So what if anything, is this something that both sides do after a decision comes out that either one of them's happy with or one of them is not? Or
Well,
is this one of those things like
lay the frame for work for what happened, because that is important.
You might have
Like,
to catch
what is
me.
the?
You might have to
No,
catch me
I have
up
no idea. I have no idea what happened.
Yeah, did the lawyers come out after the conviction and be like, aha, let's
Yes.
now tell some differences. Here's what happened. Hannah Gutierrez had good lawyers and not a very good defense to why and how live bullets ended up on the scene of on a movie set when that's the number one, you shall not bring that around. And then someone horribly died through reckless and indifferent behavior. I'm not pissed off at her conviction. I'll be a little bit more pissed off at Alec Baldwin because I think he's got a better defense.
Oh,
And I
he's got
certainly don't
the.
like the state that the facts screwed around with how to charge him and charging him as a political selection. But they fixed all that and are now going after him a little bit more cleanly.
So I think she was a clean kill. Like, I think you could wrap your brain around, okay, if there was one person that needed to be held accountable for this, it was her. I don't know if it works with him. And now that they have that conviction, if I'm representing him, I'm pointing the finger at her and saying, look, she was the person more than any other person. And in fact, the state of New Mexico agrees with us. She's the person that was supposed to safeguard him from doing this, and she just got convicted for gross negligence. I mean, he's not an armor. He's just a glam
He's
Hollywood
an
guy. I mean,
actor.
her, he's an
What are
actor.
you supposed to do? What people tell me? Are you supposed to really think like, no, there's a director to tell me what to do. And what did he
It's the
do? follow the director.
It is like the extreme Ron Burgundy reading the teleprompter.
Seriously.
I mean, and look, whether his ego lets him be portrayed in that way or not, I don't think him being the executive producer cuts it. And my other big takeaway from that case, guys, is there were a whole bunch of people that testified to all the stuff that was wrong on that set who didn't do a damn thing to stop it. They were just like, I've never seen anything like that before. Did you do anything to stop it? No. Because I like getting paid.
No. Yep. So you decided to participate and continue in this unsafe, horribly run, dangerous, and you kept on coming back, and then you brought more. Okay, that's some fine choices you're making right there. Like, it really got fairly ridiculous.
Well, you know, we've talked in the last couple of weeks about, you know, the standing around and doing nothing rule that seems to be coming up in the news a little bit more and more. You know, if the trial had gone on, and I don't know if Gutierrez had deeper pockets or what the situation there is, could that be one of the things where you said, well, she should have said something before I got caught. Well, he should have caught on to this before I got caught. Or is it just one of these, wrap it up, get it done with, and move on?
And there circular probably... firing squad, yeah.
So again, like, I just don't see how they get to proof beyond a reasonable doubt as to his gross negligence. Like, accident? Yes. Should he have been doing what he did? No. But, like, they don't know how the bullets got there.
Yeah, that caught me.
So let's not mince words. There's asthma evidence that certain evidence was thrown out. Like, they just got rid of it. Like, how do you slay him as a defendant? I don't see how they get there. I mean, look, I'm often wrong, though. I'm often wrong. And again, the only people that will win in this case is lawyers.
And remember, if the local fix is in, then it is. I just don't think it is. I think that there might be some rehabilitation of the reputations of the prosecutors, and they try to squeeze out a dumb plea. Because remember, they could at the last minute go, all right, we're not going to put you on this giant trial. If you'll take first offender, reckless conduct, do 20 hours community service. At which point, Alec Baldwin is insane to not take that deal. And the prosecutor gets to go, yep, we made our point about safety and we prosecute. And they get to walk away with a smile. Alec Baldwin goes, man, that's just the cost, the tax, the stupid tax for being involved in a crappy movie. And that's what it is. But
I don't want to see it though.
Flash out of him in a minute.
I kind of want to see Russ now, though.
That was my next question, because we all know, a lot of people do know that this has happened before with Brandon Lee and The Crow, and that movie eventually came out. Do you guys think this movie will come out, or do you think that they just want this to go away?
Absolutely,
it has to come out. I have to see it.
Oh, it's
it
gonna
makes
make
more fit. Money now that there's.
It's gonna make so much money. Yeah. You guys see, you remember, we talked about this a little bit 2 weeks ago when that submersible that was off the coast that went down to the Titanic when those five people died. You know, Titanic sales went up. Netflix put it back on Netflix and was advertising it and stuff. It's like, hey, listen, you know, it's out there. We might as well make some money off of it.
And there's a Titanic 2 that is selling tickets and to go on. Yeah.
Titanic 2.
It's the weirdness of the mob in the marketplace. People are going to want to follow that intense curiosity and see this was the movie that Alec Baldwin killed that guy. Like,
yeah, I you know what? I hate to say that because I'm not a huge Baldwin guy, but I think if it came out, I would see it.
How many people have watched Wizard of Oz trying to find the Hanging Munchkin?
I think I've seen. Well, I've seen like where they've cut it out. Remember, it was like,
oh yeah, no, like that.
Side, right?
There's a whole universe of movie fixes where they've removed things because of cultural blah 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 blah. I think they took the Twin Towers out of like 50 movies.
I can separate art from the artist.
Yeah,
like I listen to Michael Jackson music still. He's the king of pop.
Bill Cosby's his favorite comedian.
Who doesn't like Puddin' Pops?
Franz is the only guy in the country who thinks he's Bill Cosby's innocent.
Hey, Bill Cosby just misunderstood, right?
He got railroaded.
They railroaded Dr. Huxtable. They railroaded him.
You heard it here first. He's innocent.
Now, Franz, get us Dr. Cliff Huxtable as our guest. I guarantee biggest ratings of the year.
I'll reach out to him.
If his wasn't his wife in the Cosby Show, wasn't his wife a lawyer?
Yes, Felicia Rashad, who wasn't super kind when everything went that like she they supported him, but it was troublesome.
At a
distance. Well, here's the thing.
My point.
Back in the 70s and 80s, the lecherous, creepy old dude was it right out of every neighborhood. Like every neighborhood had that guy.
Weinstein. Like,
yeah, that was the role. Yeah. Ah, he's the super creepy, lecherous old guy. I hate to crap on George Bush, the senior. George Bush was known as the ladies' man who grabbed a whole bunch of asses. And there's a famous episode where he's in the wheelchair as like a 90-year-old grabbing ass and being like, yeah, because I can get away from it or get away with it. So yeah, that lecherous
old president, man, I don't have to answer your questions.
But a common trope for many years.
All right. I know we're coming up on our hour here. God, how the time flies. We're always like, we'll talk about it next week. But then we end up rattling on about electric toilets.
It's,
Penny
it's a bidet thing.
We do have to do our draft, though. I can't. I think it's Josh gets to go first this time. No, Franz goes first. Franz goes first. And we're doing.
Okay.
We got to do fast food restaurants because everybody keeps asking about food.
So if I have to pick fast food draft, I have to have a time machine because my first pick would be Burger King Whopper from the 80s, not Burger King present. So are we allowed, qualifying question, am I allowed to go back in time to the fast food place or am I, by modern standards, this is how it is now?
I will put on the notes that you picked Burger King in the 80s.
Yes, that Whopper back then was beautiful.
It was way better because they could add all the good partially hydrogenated fats to stuff. That's why French fries had a rapid decline in quality when they made the hydrogenated fats illegal and took away stuff. McDonald's and Burger King had a big thing with beef tallow because it's that little bit of beef tallow that adds the deep fry flavor but makes it non-vegetarian. And there were lawsuits about that.
Because
the best French fry, man, that's a big deal.
Have you guys had food that has MSG in it? It is
hell, I cook with MSG. It's magic.
It is absolutely magic. I know salad dressings, some of the Chinese food where they're like that.
MSG got a bad rap in the 70s when people were like, oh, it's an additive for Chinese food and it makes it. No, that's all horse manure. MSG is a regular food additive in millions of restaurants, and it is amazing for food.
It is. All right, Josh, your pick, number one.
Since Franz went back in time, I'm going to go back in time to Wendy's with the Super Bar.
I don't remember Super Bar.
The Super Bar was a full-service fast food hot bar and salad bar with salads, Italian, Mexican. I think there was one other food. Yeah, and it was a fast food shop, but man, it was good.
They used to
That was back when the Square Burger was.
Yep.
They used to have. You guys, I don't know if you remember this, when Pizza Hut had all you can eat at lunch, and they had for like $5.99, you could go eat two or three pizzas.
I was alive when KFC, Taco Bell, pizza, KFC, Taco Bell was a thing,
and they had a buffet. Bay. I remember going to a KFC Taco Bell buffet sometime right after college. So late 90s, maybe early 2000. Imagine all you can eat KFC.
There's still one left. I read this article and I think it's somewhere in Kentucky or Arkansas where there's one left that still has the buffet.
In Lafayette, my second pick, since we're running low on time, is Popeye's Chicken.
Oh, excellent.
And we had... In Lafayette, Louisiana, an hour away from Baton Rouge, we had the final and last Popeye's buffet.
Popeye's is the best fast food fried chicken, bar none. It is amazing. It's owned by AFC franchise.
I agree.
The best fast food fried chicken.
Josh, your second pick?
I'm going to go with a Southeastern limited chain, Martin's, which is a kind of old-fashioned Southern a homespun fast food restaurant, like your good friends started their own fast food restaurant with their Burgers, fries, lots of breakfast. So very well known for huge biscuits. Really great breakfast.
Oh, Franz, number three.
This is going to anger some people. I've got a special place in my heart for Taco Bell.
Yes.
I can destroy. 100%. So when I go off wagon, off the dietary wagon, I sit in a Taco Bell drive-through, and I shame myself.
The crunch wrap
I've done
supreme.
A $20 single person order.
The
like,
crunch
I've
wrap
been
supreme
like,
is the best thing they've ever done. You get every taco ingredient, every supreme ingredient, hard and soft, wrapped up in this little hug.
And if you haven't used their online app, it makes ordering so awesome because now you can get everything with black beans and you can add chilies and you can add onion. And it's really, Taco Bell is a masterpiece of food efficiency.
All right, Josh, number three. We're going to do a whole
All right, I'm going to go with America's favorite and my regular breakfast because it's the best fast food coffee out there, McDonald's.
Yes.
McDonald's coffee is the best fast food coffee. And if given my... What do you need for breakfast in the morning? Their hash brown is a decent product. Yep. Their biscuits are solid B biscuits. The round egg is good.
Canadian.
So I'm nostalgic. I cannot shake the feeling I used to have in the 80s with McDonald's when they would have like the Lego toys. And like my mom was a chain smoker, so my mom had the ashtray at the table in McDonald's.
The little metal
one. Tin ashtray that you could stack. Yeah.
And I don't know if the burgers and fries were better in the 80s. And I'm just misremembering.
The fries were because of the beef tallow.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I also remember back in the day when they had the two tables that were right next to each other. And one was a smoking table and one was a non-smoking table.
So, I mean, these are top fast food places we've been picking.
Your last one right now.
Mine?
Yep.
Oh. So are you, I don't know if it's made it to Canada, Raising Cane's?
No.
It's a chicken finger. I know you don't like it, but it's a chicken
Zaxby's
finger.
Zaxby's or Raising Cane's, man. Zaxby's, Raising Cane's. I'm a Zaxby's man, even though
it's
super crazy.
I want waffle fry or crinkly fries. I want chicken fingers and I want Texas toast. If I can have those things in a box, I'm happy.
At both of those.
All right, Josh, your last pick.
So I understand that lots of people have objections, but Chick-fil-A is the highest quality, best run fast food organization out there. They limit the owners to two individual units, so your owner is always there. They treat their employees better than any other fast food restaurant. They give them scholarships. I own Truett Cathy's, one of his old cars. I disagree profoundly with some of the personal values of some shareholders. But the corporation, Chick-fil-A, is one of the best organizations out there. Huge giving. And the quality of the food cannot be beat. Nothing runs as well as Chick-fil-A.
Oh, for more Josh and Franz, maybe you need a lawyer. Maybe you need advice. Maybe you need to know which automatic toilet seat to pick. Or maybe you were fired for doing God knows what. But if you are, check out Joshua Schiffer at www.jdgrouplaw.com, on Twitter at Lawyer Schiff, or just Google Joshua Schiffer or reach out to me for an extra helping of Franz. In Louisiana, visit www.borghartlawfirm.com, on Twitter at borghartlaw, or just use the old international network, Google it. Reach out to me, whatever, gentlemen. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thank you all. Have a great one. Can't wait for next week, and I got to run.